This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Overland Park, a congregation that exists to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
You know, one of the things that is, I think, really almost a plague in our culture is our inability to make and keep promises, our inability to be people of commitment. I read an article this week that referenced a national survey on divorce, and lack of commitment is the most cited reason for divorce. Patrick Lencioni's leadership book, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, if you've read that, you know dysfunction number three is lack of commitment. And we see this in all kinds of ways in our society, and you could almost say we're committed to not make commitments. Well, enter Ruth, who makes such a wild promise that in our modern context, it almost seems insane that a person would do this. You know, it's epic. Ruth says to Naomi, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. There I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." So last week, Naomi was our companion who showed us how to lament. And this week, Ruth and Boaz come to us as our companions who show us what a life of commitment looks like. And the word that's behind this whole idea of a committed life of promise making and promise keeping, the word behind it is a Hebrew word, hesed. Hesed. It is frequently translated loving kindness or steadfast love, sometimes loyalty, sometimes faithfulness. Hebrew scholars tell us there's no real English word that can fully do this word justice. If you're going to understand hesed, you need to see it in action. You need to see it embodied. And this is exactly what Ruth and Boaz do for us in this story. You know, the notion of hesed is right at the heart of God's character. He's a God of steadfast love, of faithfulness and kindness. And that means as his image bearers, we are called to share that same kind of character. And without hesed, our lives and the world can be a very terrifying place. You know, we don't have to watch the news for very long to know that there is a lot that goes on that is worthy of lament. And if we're going to play a healing role in our world, then I think we have to understand what this kind of committed life is all about. Because where hesed is, there is peace, there is life, there is joy. And so let's look at two things this morning. First of all, I want to look at what constitutes a life of hesed or a life of loving kindness or steadfast love. And then how do we find the power to live it? So what constitutes it? What makes it up? And then how do we find the power to live it? So let's first talk about what makes up this life of hesed, of loving kindness. Well, we see right from the start in the story that this idea of hesed has the force of a promise behind it. There's a promise. For Ruth, it's this promise to stay with Naomi. In other words, even when things get hard, when they get costly, she's not going anywhere. Naomi can count on Ruth. So Ruth's promise, in essence, brings stability and predictability into Naomi's life, because that's what promises do. Theologian Lewis Smedes, he says that when we make a promise, we're making an appointment with ourselves in the future. I love that. We're making an appointment with ourselves in the future. We're committing ourselves to a way of life that extends into what is yet to come. A promise is not a proclamation of commitment. Rather, it is a pledge of commitment, and there's a big difference. You know, this is one reason why in the Anglican Church that we don't let people write their own marriage vows. I mean, people ask me, they say, can we write our vows? And I say, sure, they're in the prayer book. You can write them down as many times as you'd like. Knock yourselves out. They may not mean to, but most often people, when they write their own vows, they weaken them. They infuse them with a lot of emotional language, like, Julie, I love you more than any man ever could. Really? Are you sure about that, Julie? Are you sure? You know, this is important distinction. In the traditional vows, we don't proclaim our love. We promise our love. And again, there's a vast difference in those two things. We're saying, look, come what may, into the future, I will be there. I will be with you. I will be for you. That is not going to change. That's the kind of stuff that creates safety, that creates peace and gives life. And that's what Ruth does for Naomi. You know, their lives have been characterized by anything but predictability. I mean, famine, death, and the resulting instability that comes from all that take their toll. But by making this promise, Ruth creates a place of predictability in their otherwise crazy and chaotic lives. And it's the starting place that allows for healing to begin to come in. And that's what hesed, loving kindness, is all about. You know, no one would have blamed Ruth if she had just gone back to her family like her sister did. No one would have blamed her. That's exactly what was expected of her. But that's the whole point. Hesed goes beyond what is expected. It goes beyond what anyone would think you should do. I mean, think about it. No one knows what's going to happen to Naomi. I mean, maybe she sinks into a deep depression. No one would blame her. Maybe she becomes very bitter and hard to live with. Maybe Ruth just gets bored, you know, with Naomi. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because Ruth has made a promise to her. She's in essence saying, I'm going to put my own interests, I'm going to set those aside and put your interests first. And notice, you know, when Ruth makes this great promise to Naomi, Naomi doesn't say anything. She doesn't say, wow, that's amazing, Ruth. Thank you so much. No, she doesn't say anything. Perhaps she's still too traumatized. But, you know, hesed doesn't require thank you or a pat on the back, you know, to keep it going. Now, I think we think of promises incorrectly. We think of promises as limiting and constricting. But actually, I think promises are an act of freedom. You know, the animal kingdom operates on the basis of instinct, right? If their instincts tell them to attack, they attack. If their instincts tell them to flee, they flee. Whatever their instincts tell them to do, they do. And so in that sense, they are subject to their instincts, to their impulses. And so when we act on the basis of our instincts or impulses, then we're actually in bondage. Whatever they tell us to do, we just do it. But the Bible actually looks at human beings in a much more lofty kind of way. We're freer than that. We actually have the capacity for faithfulness. You know, we alone have the capacity to make and to keep promises. And when we do, what a difference it makes in our lives. You know, our promises are really what make us people of substance. To quote Smeeds again, he says, "Promising and keeping promises is the toughest social duty of our time. But down the pike, it is the only human, the only redemptive way." And so making promises is one of the elements that makes up hesed, a life of loving kindness. The second thing is that steadfast love, or hesed, is marked by extravagance. Extravagance. We see this both in Ruth and Boaz. Ruth displays this just by her willingness to actually go out there in the field to glean for grain. You know, she's a foreigner. She's a foreigner. She's in a patriarchal society. It's the time of the judges, which is a time of chaos in Israel. This is risky for Ruth. If you read the text, you'll notice that Boaz tells his men not to lay a hand on her. Why would he tell them that? Because they just might. And no one would have been shocked or surprised. This is not a safe place for Ruth. But she takes the risk. And why? Well, because she's committed to Naomi. She's committed to this extravagant life of hesed, of giving her life away for the sake of others. What about Boaz? He really exemplifies this extravagance. You know, he's heard of Ruth. He's impressed by her. He knows the hardship and the vulnerability that Ruth and Naomi face. The Old Testament law requires that the foreigner or the poor be allowed to glean on the edge of a field. But Boaz tells Ruth, look, you can pick grain and just go right into the middle of the field. In fact, he even tells the workers, his harvesters, hey, as you harvest some of the grain, just throw it on the ground so that Ruth can come behind you and pick it up. So this is over the top. This is way beyond the letter of the law. She ends up with grain equivalent of 15 days' wages. So in other words, Ruth got paid 15 times what Boaz paid his other workers. And then he invites her to lunch, feeds her, and then gives her leftovers to take home for Naomi. And remember, this is not our world. This is like every day they're wondering, where is our food coming from? This is a big deal. So Boaz shows hesed by being extravagantly hospitable. You know, you read the Bible, you read the New Testament, there's all kinds of calls for God's people to be hospitable. And the Greek word actually means to entertain strangers. It's one of the chief things that actually marked the early church. They were people who cared for strangers, and it was so bizarre to non-Christians. They had never seen that before. Like, why would you care about someone that's not your own family? It was the first time the world had ever seen anything like this. Monastic communities made this a really high priority. Benedict's Rule talks about how all guests who present themselves are to be welcomed by Christ as Christ. And I think if the church, if we are to kind of recover our vocation in the world, if we're to be a healing force, then we have to recover this ministry of hospitality, both to those inside the church and those outside. So Hesed is all about making promises and keeping promises and extending extravagant hospitality. It's about giving ourselves away for the sake of others. It's the call of all followers of Jesus. And so now we have to ask the question, how do we get the power to live it out? How do we get the power to live like that? Obviously, it's not by just, you know, gritting our teeth. It's not by dogged determination. We know how quickly that fades. We know how strong selfishness can be in all of us. So how do we live it out? Well, how did Ruth get to this place in her life where she was ready to make this kind of promise? Well, look at what Boaz says to her. He essentially acknowledges that Ruth is one who has come to rest herself under the wings of the Lord God, the God of Israel. That's where Ruth has taken refuge. And why did Ruth do that? Because the text doesn't tell us. So we have to kind of imagine, say, how did Ruth get to this place in her life where she was ready to commit herself to the Lord like that? I think there can only really be one answer that makes any sense. It has to be that in her years with Elimelech's family, she saw something about their lifestyle, something about their faith that was appealing. And even though they had suffered these tragic circumstances where God's faithfulness was really difficult for them to see, that somehow Naomi still held on to that as real, as the deepest of deep truths, that God is a God of steadfast love, of Hesed, and therefore he was their only hope. He was the one in whom you could come and find rest. And Ruth comes to the place, for whatever reason, she comes to the place where she decides that's what she wants for herself. And so she says to Naomi, "Your God will be my God." And Boaz understands that Ruth has come to know God as the one who shows Hesed. He is a promise-making and promise-keeping God. And therefore, Ruth is also a person of Hesed, of steadfast love. It's not hard for us to figure out that Jesus is the best example of a life of Hesed. He epitomizes the one who gives himself away for the sake of others. Was it costly for him to practice this kind of steadfast love? Of course. More than we could ever know. You know, whenever we love, love is always costly, right? It always is costly. In love, there is always a death to the self. There's always a death to the self. Well, in Jesus' case, that death to self was literal. It cost him his life. He took the judgment upon himself that we deserve. It was costly. And why? He did it for our sake. He gave himself so that we might live, so that we might know the hospitality of God, so that we might be welcomed into his family. That's the good news. But it doesn't just end there, because the truth is it continues over the entire course of our lives. Because what I know about me and you is that all of us are continually going our own way. All of us are continually, daily, trying the Lord's patience in numerous ways. And yet, the Lord still draws close to us. Why? Because he's a God of hesed. He's made a promise. And so he's committed. That's why Jeremiah writes in Lamentations, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. So our commitment to the Lord is only made possible because of his commitment to us. We love, John says, because he first loved us. And so Ruth has come to know this God. She has left the gods of her own land, and she has given herself to the God of Israel, the one under whose wings she has taken refuge. And so Ruth is able to give herself away because she knows God has my back. It's like when Jesus says, look, God feeds the birds and he dresses the flowers. He's going to take care of you. That's essentially what Paul is saying in Romans chapter 8 when he says, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? And the obvious answer is, well, he will. Of course, he will. You know, without promises and faithfulness, there's only instability and anarchy. And goodness knows, we've got enough of that. Those are not conditions in which to live and thrive. But looking to God who shows himself to be faithful, we can be people of hesed, of steadfast love. We can model faithfulness in our relationships. We can establish patterns of predictability in our otherwise unstable and chaotic lives. And Ruth and Boaz, they come to us in this story as our companions to remind us we are created with the capacity for faithfulness. And I think they very gently urge us to live like it. All right, now Kirk is going to come up and lead us in our prayer time.
So this is a time...